Well, Peter made a momentous decision that day, didn't he? As you realise, he was a fisherman, and I guess a perfectly competent fisherman, probably many generations of fishermen. But even the best fishermen have bad days, or bad nights in this case. And that morning when he met Jesus, then everything changed really radically. To start with, it looked as if Jesus knew better about fishing than he did. At least he knew where to find fish. Unless it was a fluke, of course. Shows that you can't rely on skill and experience and all that sort of stuff when God takes control. And Jesus called Peter that day to a radically new life, completely different, though perhaps with some transferable skills, as we would say nowadays, because Jesus said he was going to catch people rather than fish. But he had to leave everything he knew, all his past, and move on into totally untested territory. A totally ridiculous idea. He spent 3 years as apprentice, as it were, to Jesus, following him round. He made lots of mistakes, but also had some really inspirational insights. After the crucifixion, he wanted to go back to fishing. But Jesus found him again, called him again, recommissioned him, as we've just heard. And we can read in the book of the Acts of the Apostles how that ministry then developed and how he became so instrumental in spreading the gospel in the early days. Exciting times, difficult times, and of course eventually martyrdom. Peter's quite a hard act to follow, I guess, on all sorts of levels. It's almost exactly within a week or two, 40 years ago, that I knelt before Bishop George Reindorp, who some of you might even remember. So is he looking around? Perhaps not. Who was Bishop of Salisbury at the time and was licensed as what were known as readers in those days and received this blue scarf and was called to a specific ministry within the church, Ian said, called in those days readers, nowadays licensed lay ministers. Just want to read you the job description, as it were. Readers are lay people called by God, trained and licensed by the church to preach, teach, lead worship, assist in pastoral, evangelistic, and liturgical work. Sounds grand, doesn't it? Of course, a lot of that stuff can be done by anyone with the appropriate gifting, as we have people here who preach, for instance, and who lead worship, and who assist in pastoral work, as lay pastors and what have you. What makes lay ministers different, as is true also of ordained clergy, of course, is that we are licensed, or trained, first of all, trained and licensed with a wider ministry within the church. So it's not just within this church, or even, in a sense, within this diocese, but wider. So although I was licensed in Salisbury, and I'm now in Salisbury, my middle time of my ministry was in Winchester. So we have a slightly different role, slightly wider role to exercise than those who are called to minister in one particular congregation. Now, I'm going to take liberty this morning of sharing part of my life story with you, as I believe God's called me. Not because I think my story is particularly important, more than anybody else's, but what I hope will be a bit of a stimulus to you. And as we go on, I would like you to consider how God has called you through your life. Particular instances, perhaps, when you felt his call. Maybe something big, maybe a life-changing event. Maybe something quite small, significant for that one day or that one person. But I'd like to think about that and possibly to share something later on in the service. So my story, which I hope you will resonate with bits of as I go through. And I'm going to start as a teenager. Age 16, I used to go to Crusaders. Some of you know about Crusaders. Well, a new Crusader group started at my end of town. And so I felt I ought to go and support it. Didn't know anybody there, didn't know anything about it, but I felt I ought to go along, so I did. Next week, I was leading a group of 5 to 7-year-olds. And we met in the leader's bedroom, a wonderful man who opened his house for us. Flat, actually, it wasn't even a house. The youth group I belonged to used to go and lead services in little village chapels, places that were desperate, obviously, to have teenagers come. But we used to go and we used to lead worship in these chapels, and I had to speak occasionally. A group of friends, we started recording Bible stories, plays of Bible stories. It was the time when there was a dearth of any resources for young people at all. And we started recording reel-to-reel tape. Some of you heard of reel-to-reel tape? Yes. We recorded these plays to lend out to Sunday schools. But what did God want me to do long-term? Well, the back of my mind was a thing called ordination. Trouble was, I'd had two brothers, one of whom is sitting there, who had gone to be ordained. And there was no way I was going to do the same as they did. Well, at school, I'd experienced what I considered to be very mediocre RE teaching. And so I felt that God was calling me to do better. And that is the line I worked down. I was a teenager, remember. I got appalling A-level results, I think partly because I spent so much time doing the Christian stuff, but also because of the stuff I was, things I was studying. Anyway, only one university would even look at me vaguely, and that was St. John's College in Durham, which is a Christian college, and they were sympathetic to my calling. So I read a theology degree. And that broadened my understanding and vision quite considerably. And then I did a postgraduate certificate of education, which was meant to prepare me for teaching. I'm not sure it did really, but there we are. And I ended up teaching in a South Yorkshire mining village that had the dubious reputation of having the biggest comprehensive school in the country. And I was there as an RE teacher, and it was absolutely horrendous. How I survived, I do not know. God is gracious. But anyway, I felt as things went on that God was calling me to care for young people in the broadest sense. I was not there to teach RE as a theological academic discipline, but I was there to care for people, young people. And so that's what I tried to do. And I did it for 24 years at that school in South Yorkshire and then in Blandford. Meanwhile, my vicar at that time, this is up in South Yorkshire, suggested lay ministry, become a reader. And so I did what passed for training in those days, which again wasn't up to much really, and was licensed, and have been privileged since to serve in three churches, two of them outside of the evangelical tradition. And that's important to me and to Rosemary, my wife at that time, that we served in the church of our community, part of a Christian family in that place. I did some preaching, but at that time I never saw it as my primary calling, so I did some young people's work, and there's a victim of it there, in the person of Stephen, and later on led Alpha courses and similar things. Well, after 24 years teaching, I felt it was time to move on. And I had a really dramatic dream, which I understood, again, as a call to ordained ministry. I was wrong, but God was calling me, I believed, to work within the church, some sort of ministry within the church, as opposed to in the school, secular school. And this turned out to be work as the local representative for Church Mission Society, which meant I worked with churches across this part of the country. And that, of course, was a big change from the classroom. But a huge privilege. I met people from all around the world, and I ministered in a wide range of churches of different sort of traditions. And many people now vowed they must pray for me, because I was now in full-time Christian service. At the same time, I was diagnosed with osteoporosis, which sometimes was very painful and certainly limited my travel. And lots of people immediately began to pray for my immediate healing. But I became clear that that was not what God was wanting, that this too was part of his call on my life at this time. And so I pursued that for 12 years. But change was ahead. After 35 years marriage, three children, my wife Rosemary contracted terminal lung cancer. And CMS may be redundant. But God provided for me a part-time role as city centre chaplain in Winchester, an ecumenical post which supported workers in shops and offices. And I did that for 3 years. But it was a lonely role for a widower. Well, mowing the lawn one day, I heard this clear inner voice telling me to retire to Swanage. A totally ludicrous idea, as I knew no one here. And all the sensible people supported me. The people who knew known better supported me. And here I am. And the rest you know. There was this attractive young lady who invited me to tea. And we became clear we should marry. And again, my family supported this stupid idea. And God has called me into a sometimes challenging family environment. But when I came to Swanage, I was clear that ministry within the church's walls was not my primary calling. That it was the community, and it was to inter-church initiatives. And so citizens' advice, churches together, and now link visiting and art workshop are my primary ministries. God keeps calling me on. But that also means leaving things behind, as Peter had to do with his fishing. What God calls me to do now is different from, though it builds on, what he called me to do at 18. So, I'm resigning from Churches Together, from being Mission Action Team Leader, and I'm surrendering my reader's license in order to concentrate on new things, though I shall keep a prayerful interest in the others. So that's bits of my story. Ups and downs, ins and outs. Don't know, interesting, isn't it? At least I think it is, because it's my story. Perhaps it's not to you. But what are the interesting bits in your story? Now, here's the question. Anybody brave enough to stand up and give an example of a time, just briefly, of a time when you feel God has called you? As I say, it may be a mega life-changing thing, or it may be just a one-off in a day thing. But if one or two of you be brave enough to do that, then that would give a breadth, wouldn't it, to our experience, our collective experience of how God has called us. Just have a second to think about that. Now, before we finish, I think there are some really important questions we need to ask. Can we have the questions up, please? Right, I'm afraid that the print may seem a bit small. It's because there are going to be seven of them. Okay, but just thinking, not just about what I've said, but what about you have experienced in your life and how God has called you. But just thinking back through your life, which of your life experiences or life activities has been more significant, particularly significant? Oh, that's the wrong way. Let's go this way. Were there any of them were not actually God's call, but simply my own ideas? Were those in a secular setting more or less important than the church ones? What does it mean to be in full-time Christian service? Where do family and illness and bereavement fit in? Which roles are worthy of other people's prayers? And I suppose the crunch one, how does God call us? So let's keep looking to the future with those questions in mind. Let's keep thinking, what is God calling me to now in the future? Or perhaps, what might he be asking you to lay aside in order to adopt new roles? Let each of us come before God and ask him to guide us, to be sensitive to him, however he's going about leading us, to listen to him for the little things, because in general, he calls the big things, people are obedient in the small.